Welcome to the Thinking Pilates podcast, where show after show, we bring you a different way to think about teaching Pilates. We make you dig deep, ask the tough questions, and keep unraveling the rich layers of teaching movement. I'm Chantel Lopez, founder of Skillful Teaching, an international education company just for Pilates and movement teachers, and author of Moving Beyond Technique. I am so gratefully joined in this delightful and crazy endeavor by my sometimes co-host and podcast co-founder, master teacher, and mentor, Deborah Colway, as well as the brilliant and funny, consummate explorer of movement and people, James Crater. Welcome, everybody. This is the Thinking Pilates podcast, and I'm Chantel Lopez. I am here this morning with James Crater, the fantastic and amazing, and the equally fantastic and amazing Anula Myberg. Hello, darlings. How are you?
Hi.
Hi. Hey, great to be on with you guys. This has already been a totally entertaining conversation off well, not technically off recording, but officially on recording now. I'm going to immediately hand the mic, proverbial mic, over to James. And James is going to introduce Anula just briefly, and then we're going to dig in.
I'm super excited to have Anula on the podcast. We have been online friends for probably, a couple years now, Anula?
Mm-hmm. Give or take.
But also, yeah. Like, real-life, three-dimensional friends for not even a year, but I feel like we became really fast friends, especially after our whirlwind tour of LA and Santa Barbara a couple of months ago.
That's right.
And I felt like I really got to know you. You know, like when you're spending 5 days with someone trapped in little hotel rooms, you kind of get
sharing beds.
Sharing beds.
Literally.
Lots of breakfast meats and hamburgers.
Oh my God. So much. Bathrooms and beds. Bathrooms and beds make friends forever.
Or enemies forever.
That's it. Yeah. Or end the friendship.
Yeah. Immediately. Right.
When your bed is literally stepped away
in front of the bathroom. Yeah.
You become very good friends with someone. And so
this is a great topic.
Already an award-winning podcast.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Wait for it.
Yeah.
But I felt like I really got to understand you as a person a little bit differently, and then see your work differently. And I've had the chance to be a part of your Pilates Anytime experience on a couple of occasions now, and take a workshop with you. And I feel like the work you present on social media and sort of out there is wonderful and fun work, but there's like a total richer, deeper level to you that I think people would be really, really interested in exploring, and that's sort of why
I was adamant
about getting you on the podcast.
Yeah,
that's a kind thing to say.
Yeah, because there's like a really rich, wonderful vein of not just like exercise, but of like thinking behind your work. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of what I wanted to kind of talk about today. So, curious if you can tell us a little bit about your history and how you got where you are today. And you can sort of interpret that question however you'd like. If you want to go into like you as a person history or just your Pilates history, whatever you think is important for people to understand.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Pilates history is sort of become less of an interesting thing to talk about in the personal history is somehow always more interesting. I mean, I moved to New York probably 17 years ago at this point, and I thought I would be Andy Warhol, but like a woman, and opposed to a gay man, and which is, you know, whatever, potato, potato. And then I was thinking like, oh, like I'll move to New York, and I'm going to have like my own factory, and all these amazing characters will just come in and out. And I was 18, and I was sure that that's just what was going to happen. And so most of my life, I was just working towards being some kind of artist, of, you know, whatever that means. And the Pilates interest came along, and there was just no way that those two things would be divorced from one another. So, that's it.
Yeah. So with that, I think there's a lot there. I mean, I think probably a population does know, but maybe not everyone knows that you're like an educated photographer. Like that's what you went to school for.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And, you know, you can kind of see it in, I mean, like, I can definitely see it in your work, but I think that will be important. I mean, I think that gets really, really important for how you present your work. And so for those of you who don't know, Anula was not born in the U.S. So you were originally from Israel and moved over here, which I think is also important to your work because, you know, kind of off topic, like something I didn't mention earlier, is so many, I'm finding more and more and more interesting movement work coming out of Israel. You know, that Hadar Schwartz, you have Jonathan Hoffman, you've got a lot of interesting movement stuff. So what the hell is in the water over there? Like, you guys are doing
it's always been a really good place for art and dance and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it makes sense that, you know, all the great Israeli artists, writers, singers, all that would be also interested in movement modalities and spend time learning and inventing. And, like, it just seems like sort of like the norm to me. Like, people are, that's just kind of like, that part of
culture.
The population is just like, yeah, it's like, you know, that seems normal.
Yeah. Well, that's really wonderful. You know, it's sort of like a lack of deviation between science and art, you know, like the merger of science and art. I've always found that really, really interesting. And you can kind of see that in your work where it's not one nor the other. It's kind of a mixture of both, which is just really interesting. Thinking beyond,
is it really interesting?
No, I mean, because I think, you know, again, you know, you present your work as art more frequently than not. But there is a really, you do have a very detailed understanding of kinesiology and movement mechanics. You sort of don't talk about,
it's the work. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, it seems like that, like, you don't kind of need to talk about it because, like, they're one and the same. Like, if you really are interested in your, I don't know, like, if I'm really interested in my craft, I'm going to go, like, hopefully real deep and into it. Whatever that means, like, I'm trying not to make, like, too big of a generalization, but, like, the same way you study art, you know, it depends on where you start counting, right? Like, you start counting at, like, cave paintings, or do you start counting art history at, like, modernism? Like, it's the same with movement. Like, how far back are you going in your interest? So I kind of tackle everything like an art history class, like, do we go back to, like, who invented the squat, or do we go as far back as the birth of Mr. Pilates, or do we go as far back as, like, you know, Isadora Duncan? Like, where do we go?
Yeah.
That's an interesting question for me.
Yeah.
That I don't have an answer for.
I didn't expect that.
Do you mean, like, in terms of where the perspective from which you feel like you gather, you know, insight, or do you mean like, that plus?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's like, how far back do we, like, start studying, and what sort of matters, and like, what are we putting, like, what is valuable to you, or to, let's say, to me personally as a movement practitioner, to delve into? Like, how far do I want to nerd out about things? And I kind of don't know that there's a limit.
Sure.
Of how far back I want to go, and then, like, how laterally I want to go within each step of, like, how movement is developed. Like, do we go primal, like James does, and, you know, do we go dancey? Do we go, you know, like, just like different eras of, you know, art history. Like, do we go like Cubism?
Right.
Like, it's just like, it's never like my brain, like, never stops thinking about what we're doing in relation to the context of the time that we're in, which is really what art historians do. Art doesn't live without a context.
Right.
It doesn't have meaning without a context. So things are only meaningful within the time that they were created. So if you look at, like, you know, I don't know, something like the very famous, like, urinal of Marcel Duchamp, and, like, you know, like, now you put it in the, you know, in the museum and then be like, oh, that's a urinal, but at the time it was shocking, right?
Mm-hmm.
The same with movies and the same with TV and the same with music. Like, Dylan goes electric, right? Like, it's shocking, right? It's the same thing with, like, what we're doing. Like, there's that, like, moment where you, like, you look at somebody moving a certain way where it's been done this one way, and we're all like, what, you know? To me, it's the same. You know, there's no real difference between Dylan going electric and then somebody putting a boost on the reformer.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
It's that same sort of reactionary, like, shocking, interesting, anger-making moment that is what makes this work lively. What would the world look like if, you know, I don't know, like, none of those things happened? Pinnacle moments in like pop culture.
Here,
it would be in a really different place.
Yeah. You know, I'm having this interesting, maybe just insight about you, Nuala, since I don't have the same kind of personal experience with you as James does. But, you know, some of the things that I've, you know, following you and reading what you've written and quotes and things, I feel like there's something very interesting about this. And I don't know if this is actually true, but it feels like this is beautiful. This is like kind of a beautiful thing, right? The thinking about context and how powerful it is in terms of what we're offering or what we're teaching. What I think is interesting about what you're doing, and it is, I do think it's interesting, and I think it's, you know, obvious that it's interesting to others, just by the number of followers that you have and, the kind of activity that, you know, the buzz around what you're doing is that, you know, it's a lot, I think a lot of what happens in our industry, and not, certainly not limited to our profession, but everything is that we choose a context, as you're saying, like, you never know how far back to go, like, from what perspective, you know, to gain insight, is that people...
And then you don't know your context until, like, 100 years later. Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't know, like, what context things are in until they were given context by somebody, like, later on.
Right. But I think people go back,
you know what I mean?
And they prescribe to a context, and then they get very rigid in that context. And then it just becomes exclusionary and it becomes limiting. And I think what I see in the work that you're doing is that the context is important and valuable, but it's not a fixed, like, definable right or wrong thing.
Yeah. I mean, we can be malleable. I mean, we can't change where we are in time, let's say. Like, we're not time travelers, but we can sort of, like, imagine things. We could be more imaginative, I think, is the way I think about it, where you could imagine that, like, what's shocking to you now or interesting to you now and the same level will be interesting or less interesting later. Like, think about, like, you know, like, I think movement is the same thing that we're experiencing with cell phones, you know, like our, we're sort of changing the way we're moving in relation to this machine,
totally.
Right? And we're not going to know the actual ramifications of what this is doing to the body until 100 years from now,
right,
or more, right? Like, people are going to start getting, like, real deformed. You know what I mean? Like, because, like, they're glued to this, like, you know, little piece of plastic. And, like, what is that going to do to us? But that's sort of, like, how I think curious minds are all the time. Like, I don't think this is special to me. I'm not coming up with any of these thoughts, you know?
No, but I think you are one of the first people to sort of bring that to, you know, Pilates, definitely, and maybe even fitness movement in general. And it's sort of like, do you see yourself, like, as you're talking, I'm like, I wonder if she sees herself more as a provocateur or a curator of movement. So do you think your movement work is more provocative or like a curation of possibility?
I mean, I think it's provocative only because, like, there are people that are sort of living in, I would say, like, the pre-Raphaelite time of time, you know? So it's provocative because, like, we're, like, living on different planes of existence. But I don't think it's provocative to, like, you know, a 20-year-old just graduating from, like, a progressive Pilates program, you know, like, it depends on who's looking. I think some people are not finding my work provocative at all. Like, they're probably like, I'm doing that too.
Isn't that always the case, though? I mean, it is always, you know, it's a matter of perspective and context. So it's going to mean different things to different people. I think, you know,
it's provocative to someone and then like so super boring to someone else.
Well, the same is true for the work that I do and the work that James does. You know, I think it's
exactly.
So that leads me into my next question. Like, what is it in your brain? Are you with your intention? What is it that you really do and how do you describe your work?
Well, I think you said it like 2 seconds ago, which is like, I think it's, I'm a choreographer. So, but like, you know, a choreographer in the sense that, you're a composer or, some kind of like orchestrator of movement. It's not necessarily defined. Like, I think that's like the nicest way to define it. So when people leave my hour of teaching or my class, I want them to feel like they were led through a series of movements that had some kind of personal meaning to them. Like a dance or like an interestingly composed photograph or a bunch of paint on a canvas that, you know, somehow is abstract but still made you feel a certain way. Maybe it's negative, maybe it's positive, but like it's intentional, directive movement, that isn't necessarily anything, you know, it goes under the umbrella of Pilates because, the principles of what Mr. Pilates had in mind are upheld in full integrity. But they're maybe not necessarily exercises that Mr. Pilates taught. So I'm following a leader, which I definitely believe that, you know, that's like, I believe that that's what I'm doing. And I'm following his thought process and honoring, many of his concepts, but making them, fit the time in which we live in now.
You know,
in my opinion. You know what I mean? Like, in my opinion only. Yeah.
You know, I'm someone who listens, like, words really matter to me. And so the way you began to describe that, you know, sort of correlating it to, you know, your classes to art and music and dance and paintings, there is both an objective and a subjective experience with that. You know, it's like, yes, this is the piece of art. This is the color on the canvas. This is the stroke I chose, composition, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't really mean anything living on its own. It only means something from a subjective experience with that. You know, that's a really interesting thing to say because it's like, yes, I'm doing the Pilates principles, but what I want you to get out of it is your experience of this. So
right.
It's more about the student. And I think that's a really cool, beautiful way to look at it.
Totally.
Because you're sort of like composing a song for your student. you know, and that sort of like, you know, like, I don't know, it's nice to think of like Kathy Grant's song, you know, it's like everything comes from something. So I don't think ideas come in from like the ether. So every experience that you've ever had influences how you do your job, even if you're a relatively non-creative person, right? Like everything you do influences everything you do. You don't live in a vacuum, you know? So it would be strange to me to go into the studio and, follow some kind of set of stricter rules, because the body in front of me is so different than the body before that. So why, like, it just doesn't make sense to go a certain way. And I don't really think that that's going against any kind of traditionalist, you know, like provocatory kind of, you know, anger making thing. It's just like a choice.
You know, there are these words, right? So choreographer, you know, James is talking about like the power of words and listening to that, like being a choreographer, being creative. You talk a lot about, I'm just looking at something you posted on Instagram, Anula, which was your myth busting, your Pilates practice tour, restoring and advancing confidence on and off, on and beyond the mat. And then this quote from you.
Yeah.
In the Pilates Style blog, I'm inviting people to come practice being better at life without any spiritual or nutritional component. I think it's so interesting to me because there are people who get totally up in arms about like, it's this way, it's only this way, and you can only call it Pilates if you do it this way. And for me, it's like, if you think about, to me, I just feel like everything's creative. We're just creating all the time. The moment you get up out of bed, the moment you speak, the moment you take a breath, like you're creating something. You're in, like that's being
you're
alive.
You're feeding your kids. You're feeding yourself.
Yeah, you're breathing. Yeah, in the creative process. And it's interesting though that it feels like to me there are these different ways, right, of bringing creativity kind of into existence. And your approach is honor the moment. Be with what's in front of you, you know, use the tenets of this method to create something that makes you feel something, like makes you feel more alive. My experience on the other end with a lot of classical teachers is that, and it depends on the teacher totally, but I think that can be said about contemporary teachers too, is that they're just going about it from a different perspective, right? They're using, it's like some artists need the perfect space with their paints all totally in the right place and perfectly full and, you know, everything just exactly right. And that's where they need to create from that place. I think that for a lot of classical teachers, and mostly I think of Deborah, but I know several, but Deborah talks about this, like you use the framework to then open yourself up to the potential. And of course, not everybody does that, but I just think there's this really beautiful thing. It's like, we don't have to be at odds with one another, you know, whatever we identify with but that really we're all just creating. And I just think it's so cool because I do think your work is kind of, and this conversation in particular is like bringing that to light. Like we're just all creating.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me.
Yeah. Because it's interesting that you bring that up, because I went over to Deborah Lesson's loft yesterday, and I said to her, look, like, I want a lesson and all that good stuff, but I actually just want to sit here and I want to talk to you about some things, and I want you to name names. And I made her, like, this poor woman, you know, like, I might make her sit down.
She's like, I just want your feet in springs. Just put your feet in the straps.
Exactly. She's like, we're leg circles? And I'm like, no. You know, like, what's wrong with, like, Pilates, you know? and she was just like, you know, she was sort of amenable and super gracious and interested in having this conversation. And like, the more we had a conversation about like what it is that I wanted to talk about, which is like, what's the problem, Deborah? You know, like I'm sitting there like with my, you know, pen and paper and I'm like trying to write down her thoughts. And like, she's like, what are you trying to ask me? And I'm like, what's the problem? What is the problem? Like, what is the problem? And I kept, like, and being like, no, no, listen, what's the problem? let me rephrase that. So there's a problem. What is it? You know? And she, you know, every time I asked the question, she answered more in depth and more thoughtfully. And she understood what I was trying to ask. And I just asked the same question 1,500 different ways until we ran out of physical time in the day. and, you know, it was a really satisfying exchange because I was like, Deborah, like, what? What? You know, like, why can't we just do stuff and not, like, be so worried or something or confused or be accused of something?
Yeah.
Or be a party against another party, or, like, you know, should we, like, be on an island alone with, like, our thoughts? Like, what, like, should we kill ourselves? Like, what's the thing? Like, what's the answer? Like, should I jump out of your loft? Like, what do I need to do? What is my generation of teachers supposed to do? Like, we're a few generations removed from the source, you know, like, none of us had met Mr. Pilates, like, some of our teachers have never met Mr. Pilates, like, can we just do the thing and call it the thing and then move on with our lives and stop having this boring conversation? And she was like, if you take a session with Deborah Lesson, like, you're not going by any order other than Miss Lessons order, you know. It has nothing to do with any other order that I've encountered from any classical, non-classical, traditional, blah 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 situation. So the springs are to her specifications, the push through bars to her specifications. It is not a Grotz machine, you know, like, which is what we associate classical with, right? And I was like, and definitely on the record, with permission to go on the record, there is what everybody else is doing, and then there was this, let's say, the R word, right? I can't even say it. It's like Voldemort. I'm, like, afraid. You know what I mean? Like, I'm afraid that, it'll something bad will happen to me if I say it. And Beetlejuice, you know?
Don't say it four times.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm scared. And, like, why do I have that weird feeling? Like, why does that need to be happening? And then, to me. And she's like, you know, like, everybody had a different order at a different time, at a different time at the studio with their experience and their body and their Clara and their this and that and the other thing. And, like, just, like, give up on this. Like, don't go down the rabbit hole of, like, who's more authentic than whom. And, like, let's try and focus on moving people well. Right. Which is basically what the conversation boiled down to. And the conversation even boiled down to even further than that, was to, let's just teach people how to breathe.
Jesus Christ, seriously.
Mm-hmm. And to her, and probably to all of us, if we really stop and, like, think critically about what it is that we're doing, we're just asking people to breathe and not stop breathing, and maybe breathe through the sides of their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I just want to, like, I want to use lots of expletives right now. I mean, I just feel like, for heaven's sakes, yes, can we just all get over it and get on with it? I mean, I value all of the lineage stuff. Like, of course, it's, you know, it's, like, powerful and interesting and lovely, but...
Well, it's all really, really, you know, all the lineages are interesting. And I think to get it back to that, like, creative standpoint, you know, it would make sense, Anula, that is the conversation you'd want to have with Deborah Lesson. And that is the conversation you want to bring to the point, because you are a photographer and you are a self-portrait photographer and a photojournalistic photographer. So you are interested in your art form in general is interested in truth. Your art form is interested in what is happening right now.
Yeah.
And the masters. I'm interested in my masters.
Sort of,
I want to talk about Rembrandt, and I want to talk about you know, like all the things that have led to postmodern art, right?
But
it's not like I want to be reverent to them because they're interesting to me, but I don't think that I have to be them.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that's just a different version of being interested in art, right? Like there are realistic oil painters out there who are trying to copy and to and then synthesize
as their endeavor, as their life endeavor, because that's what gets them jazzed.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And
like
they're super jazzed
about getting that. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it would make sense that you have classical Pilates instructors who are searching for, like, what is the most authentic version of And then there are other people who are like, that's cool. I can appreciate that as a reference, but I'm more interested in, like, what can this foot do on this floor right now?
Right.
What does that bring to the picture? So all of that makes sense to me. Like, it really...
Well, then there's, you know, there's the Rembrandt of the world, and then there's the Andy Warhol of the world.
Totally.
Right? And then, you know, and this doesn't mean that, like, one... Like, sure, like, you can like one more than the other, and you can have a personal opinion. Like, that's awesome. But, like, not everyone's going to be a Rembrandt. So it doesn't mean that Andy Warhol didn't exist.
Well, and about conversation should be too. Rembrandt is not better than Warhol, and Warhol was not better than Rembrandt.
Or you could say that, right? You could say that you think that one is better than the other, and then you said it, and then we all heard you, and then we all still have to do what we're doing.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
right.
Right. You know what I mean? Like, I'm totally totally aware and respectful of that opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you can have that opinion, and I'm still going to do what I'm going to do. But like, why can't you be like over on this lane, having this opinion, which I respect, because I'm not doing anything that's like threatening your Rembrandtness.
You know what I mean?
Like, I'm not doing anything that like Andy Warhol wasn't like, well, I'm going to fuck Rembrandt up. You know, like, oh, he's already died.
Yeah.
You know, he was already, like, long dead, and he already made the impact that he made. Like, that's it. Like, they can't pick a fight with one another. They're both dead, you know? So, like he wasn't like, I'm going to rumble with, like, all these guys using oil paint, you know? Like, no. Like, he was like, I'm going to do this thing. And I studied Rembrandt in art school, as I should. And then I went and I did this other thing, which didn't go against him in any way.
Mm-hmm.
In any way.
And
like, he wasn't like, fuck the masters, you know? Like, it was like, oh, I'm gonna do this thing because I'm interesting and I'm from Pittsburgh. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is where I'm from, so I'm gonna make this art. I live in, like, this time. Yeah. I definitely care about this.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is a passion.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is
I clearly yelled at you guys for no reason.
Well, it's such a powerful conversation to be having. I mean, it's the conversation to be having, I think. Not that we should preoccupy ourselves with it, you know, because as you say,
we should have the conversation, but also, I think the end of the conversation is, yes, like, Rembrandt existed. He did an amazing job with, like, what he did because he's a master of his craft. We acknowledge it. We studied it. You can still do that if you want to do that. We're not, like, there's no against, there's no, like, there's no opposition.
Right.
You know, so there's, like, a fight with, like, minus the conflict.
It just feels totally true.
It's really hard to have a fight when you're not actually in conflict with anything.
Yeah,
like, it's not conflicting.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you posted something on Instagram. I don't know when it was, but it was a quote from you. It says, because lifting each other up is way more fun. I just think, like, that's the end of the conversation. Like, that's the bottom line. That is just the bottom line.
Like, that is the end of the conversation.
Hopefully it's not the end of this conversation, but it is.
No, it's the end of the conversation because there's nowhere else more interesting to go with the conversation. So I feel like I want to put, like, a period at the end of it at this point and, you know, with all of our lives and say, like, the end of the conversation is, this is, like, being more interested in each other is just more interesting.
Totally, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's just, at the end of the day, like, the more interesting thing is to be interested, and non-dismissive.
Yeah.
And then, like, then do whatever the heck you want. Like, I actually don't care what the studio next door to me is doing. It's non-threatening to me.
Right.
I'm curious sometimes. I'll go take a class. I like it. I don't like it. Whatever. Like, live your life. Enjoy the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. it really is the end of the sentence or the end of the story, because it's like, okay, well, what do you have to say to that? But something I am interested in talking with you about, and we sort of got into it a little bit there with the art talk, is a talk on semiotics. And mm-hmm. I don't remember where I first heard you. I want to say I was with you, and the word was said, and it caught my ear, mm-hmm. because I studied communications and linguistics, and that was what I mm-hmm. studied in college. And, mm-hmm. you know, semiotics is a linguistics term. And so mm-hmm. for those of you who are listening to the podcast...
Don't explain it to them. No.
It's secret.
Don't know it.
In as simple of a term as I can possibly say, it's a meta-science or a philosophical theory of studying signs and symbols as a communicative behavior. Basically, like, in the easiest example is when I say the word tree, it automatically brings up in everyone's brain a very specific image of a tree, whatever tree that might be. But the word tree is not the tree. So saying, right. you know, like, describing the right. thing is not
so
the thing.
So So as I wrote in my thing about Apple, because I use the Apple usually, because, like, somebody could draw an apple, right? Mm-hmm. And then they could say the word apple, and there is writing, right? The letters that form the word apple, right? Mm-hmm. And you could put a tree next to the word apple, right? And, like, mm-hmm. those two things are not the same thing. And then, like, the actual letters of that create the word apple are agreed upon symbols mm-hmm. that we've all colloquially decided to form that sound,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah. Which is basically what I think of as, like, the principles of Pilates, right? Like, we've all agreed that this is what mm-hmm. it sounds like. These are the letters. Mm-hmm. So if I draw a tree, it doesn't make it an apple. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
Kind of. You know, we're talking...
Right, because it's confusing, yeah.
Yeah, we're talking signifiers yeah. and signified. And the problem right. with talking, because again, it's a meta science, so it's not really, semiotics
no,
is not,
it's not
really
a real science.
Thing. It allows you and I to have a conversation about two sciences, you know, like communication or linguistics and what we are trying to discuss. And
right.
it's sort of that in between science, but I've been heard you, I read something and you were having a conversation with someone and it was about semiotics. You said, oh, that would have made a really interesting, like, thesis or something, discussing
yeah.
like the semiotics of Pilates. And it got my brain going, because again, being a words guy, I was like, oh my God, like, that is a really great conversation to have. And I think you're already sort of having it, you know, it brought up instantly. I mean, there's a lot of ways we can talk about this, but your whole potato method thing,
mm-hmm.
hashtag potato method, is
that's
semiotic.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, the
and it's not
idea
it's not
of,
random. Yeah.
No, it's not
so, like,
random.
If I say the word potato, you think about potato, but if I put it next to me doing short spines, does it make it Pilates? Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
I don't know. And it doesn't matter.
Well, and I think it brings up, yeah, you know, I think it brings up a lot of what is the problem. In that whole semiotics thing, right? Like, if I say teaser,
yeah.
like, it automatically brings up in your brain, you already have, well, teaser should look like this. You know, the average person.
Right, I see Lisa Hubbard doing a teaser.
Yeah.
This and my hands are this and I'm this. And that image might be very different than, like, my image of that or someone else's image of that. But we're all trying to talk about the same thing using a word that does not mean the same thing to all of us and then getting angry.
Well, we can agree, yes, but we can agree that, like, when I say teaser, most Pilates teachers, right, are going to see in their mind, like the beautiful Lisa Hubbard doing a teaser on top of a grand piano, right? And then, because she's a wonderful, gorgeous human being, and she's, like, the platonic ideal of, what that movement in our in the collective imagination should look like, right? And that should is in quotes. And that she just, like is a gorgeous human. And then when I do the teaser, let's say next to that, that it looks like a potato, right? But I'm still doing the same thing, and it's still called the same thing, and it would still be written the same way. So, like, is it Pilates when I do it, you know, with my own physical form? Is the question that I've been grappling with since, like, I started teaching. Like, when I do it, it looks like this. And when, like, someone else does it, it looks like that. But we all agree on what it needs to look like. And then I'm kind of like, okay, so it needs to look like this, but it looks like this on 1% of the population. So does it need to change, or should we all still be trying to look like this thing that we don't look like? Like, we all look like trees, and there are all these apples. But there's only 1% of apples.
But it also brings up the question of, is the movement, is the purpose of the movement the form or the function of the movement? You know, like, is the teaser the actual form, or is the teaser the function of the movement, which could be come up and touch your toes. It could be sit on your butt with nothing else touching the floor. It could be, you know, any number of
things. It's endless. It's a dark hole that I go down in every night. With a lot of booze. Like, this conversation that we're having right now is what it's like inside of my head all the time. So, like, the people that have, like, have already, like, turned this podcast off because they're like, what are these people even talking about? Like, I just wanted to, like...
I guarantee you nobody has turned the podcast off. Nobody.
But do you know what I mean? Like, the people that are like, oh, God, they're getting real, like, heady about it.
I think...
These are, you know...
Those are our people.
Yeah, our people are the nerdy ones.
Yeah,
so,
totally.
You know, yeah, so, I'm thinking, like, you know, like, in my heart... Like, this is, like, I go home and I'm like, what am I doing? Like, Deborah Lesson, what are we doing? Are we teaching people to do teasers, or are we teaching them to move? And she's like, no, you're teaching them to breathe. You're teaching them to breathe doing this, and you're teaching them to breathe doing this. And you're teaching them to breathe sitting down.
That wasn't on the checklist.
Yeah, right.
No, I didn't get that part of the manual. Where it says that I'm teaching people to breathe in different relationships to gravity.
Right. Intent of exercise, breathe. Intent of exercise, breathe. Intent of exercise, right? Every single one.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is this job? Like, what is this job? And I'm like, why do we feel like as a community that we like have like all this need to talk about it so much? Like, you put a couple of Pilates instructors together in the room and like, they're going to talk about, like, their kids and their life for about, like, 5 minutes, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, that's all they got. And then the rest is going to be Pilates talk.
Yeah. Well,
it's because outside of our industry, the conversations are really kind of boring. No one else cares. But I feel that way about, like, every job, right? Like, I listen to my friends have off jobs, and they want to talk about insurance, and I'm like, and no one else cares.
You don't.
No one
else cares. And so, no one else cares.
Communal conversation. So, of course, if you've got a bunch of Pilates people, it's like, you know, geeking out.
Yeah, but like, we're
Pilates.
Like obsessed. We're like obsessed.
We are obsessed. It is.
Because I think we're not really talking. We're not really talking about Pilates.
I think that accountant comes home and hangs up his hat and talks about something else.
I personally don't come home and talk.
And like has hobbies.
They don't leave their office and go back to their office to do more of their office thing.
Right. And not to belittle anybody, but it's like I just don't think that like the you know, I don't know why I'm picking on accountants, but like I just don't think that he comes home and is like, oh yeah, like do you want to talk about like more like tax laws, you know, like they're like, no, let's like talk about sports and like this book I'm reading, and I'm just like, no.
But part of that too is like an accountant kind of knows the job, right? Like the job is laid out. This is what I do when I go to work.
Right.
This is what accountants do. And I think that's the point. You know, we're having a conversation about what is it, you know, not just us here, but like I think the community in general, especially right now, is having a conversation of what is it that we're doing? Like, what is it that we are doing when
it's
we
go to work? It's a crisis. I think it's a crisis. I don't think it's a conversation. It feels critical. And it feels very scary. There's a scary component to it. There's anxiety associated with the conversation. It doesn't feel like a friendly conversation.
I think, you know, Anula, it's like, it feels like an identity crisis, right? I mean, you talked about that too in your Pilates style blog. It really beautifully and the paragraph starts with what's the problem. The problem is that there is no colloquial cultural understanding around Pilates because, as a general rule, Pilates teachers live in fear of not being something enough, not traditional enough, not innovative enough, not interesting or authentic or intellectual or rehabilitative enough. So where there is a sense of lacking, there is also a void. The void is filled with fear. The fear feeds itself into infinity. And instead of Pilates being sexy and accessible, it's strict and intimidating. You know, it is interesting because to me, and James has heard me say this and other people have heard me say this, and I don't give a flying, you know, flipper about Pilates as a thing. Like it's like I do it and I love it and I see value in it, but it's just a vehicle for moving. It's always just been a vehicle for moving. Yeah. So to me,
and that's the conversation about like, sort of the like if you're using a camera or if you're using a canvas or if you're using a dance studio, if you're using, you know, music, right? It doesn't really matter. It's all means to an end.
But I think I mean, what you're speaking to, I think, I mean, what I hear from teachers all the time is this constant panicky, like, I need to know the difference between contemporary and classical. And which one am I? And which one am I going to be? Mm-hmm. And how am I going to identify? And I'm always like, well, I'll help you understand from my perspective what the intent of each one is. And then why do you need to be either one? I can teach both, but. Right. I don't feel like I need to choose, but I do think what you're describing is true, is we're fixated on needing to be identified with, you know, like one, identify ourselves as Pilates teachers, but we don't really know what that means. And we're like desperate to understand it as if it were the thing we needed to really understand to be effective, right? Or powerful or potent or, you know, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of the reason to live. You know what I mean? Like you just like you're looking for like an ultimate truth, and then like once you get it, you'll sort of be satisfied. Which isn't really the case because you're just gonna spend the rest of your life trying to find the truth and like not live. Yeah. Right. So like I'm so preoccupied with like trying to find like the answer. I don't think I'm ever really doing anything.
And yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like I'm doing anything.
Terrible. You know, it's like, what am I really doing here? It's like, there's always that next level.
It's too existentialism.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
It's like the Camus of like movement. You're like, but like, it's so futile. You know what I mean?
There's another realm of purgatory underneath all of this.
Yeah, like once you die, it's just like more life.
Jeez.
That's what it feels like to me. I'm like, I'll find the answer, and then I'll be like, oh, I spent my whole life looking for the answer, and I'm like, I didn't really do anything, and I'm like, sort of like a fraudulent.
Well, not to be too esoteric, but I do feel like it has a bit to do with the general human condition, right? I mean, we're seeking meaning. And so,
For sure. In
our small way, Pilates teachers are seeking meaning just like the human population seeks meaning out of religion, right? Like needing to identify as being, identify with the race, identify with the religion, identify. I mean, we do this in all these ways. It's like our way of seeking meaning. It just feels like this is just some version of the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, and it's also
that's why we make stuff.
That's
right.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, there's a photo project. Like, that's why, like, everything, like, each season has its own photo project that, you know, like, I feel compelled to make because I'm like, that's my way of, like, finding the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, I feel like I have, like the only time I feel like I'm getting nearer to it is if I'm, like, doing something super, like, weird with movement to kind of get you out of, like, the dogma of whatever it is that you're doing 8 hours a day with your mind, you know?
Well, just to look at
it.
Yeah, to provide a different way of looking at something that has become actually kind of mundane for most of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like
mm-hmm.
it's the same movement over and over again, but here's a different lens with which, you know, to kind of look at that. And so you said the word fraudulent a few sentences ago, and I'm just wondering,
mm-hmm.
with as much love that comes your way, do you still feel like your work is, or have you ever felt that your work is fraudulent? Or like,
oh, totally.
Kind of like,
all the time.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Like, constant.
do you feel like it's, maybe more than how so, at what level? Like, as in,
I feel like, you know, because I think that, like, it comes from, like, the very core of, like, my bone marrow, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
because, like, I don't have the right Pilates pedigree or
mm-hmm.
DNA or body or fat content or lack thereof, that, you know what I mean? Like, it's, like, fraudulent from the, like, pun intended, from the core, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, everything I'm doing is, like, you know, like, sort of like the court jester of what it is that we're all doing.
Hmm.
You know, like, I'm sort of entertaining and, you know, but it's not like the real thing.
Huh.
Somehow.
Yeah, no, I mean, I totally get that as a thinking process. But from an outside perspective, and it brings up another question, too, of, you know, because you have chosen to present so much of your work via social media,
mm-hmm.
and the culture we live in is a selfie culture,
mm-hmm.
I think oftentimes your work could easily be perceived as there's just another selfie of me doing
mm-hmm.
Pilates. I view it as self-portraiture, and it's funny that you mentioned Warhol to begin with, because that's one of the things that it has always reminded me of, you know, either Cindy Sherman's work or Andy Warhol's or Avedon's
mm-hmm.
work, you know, where it's the person doing the thing, and
it's like 90% of the thing. Yeah.
Exactly. And so,
but that's just postmodernism in general, right? So, like, postmodernism, right, is just that. Like, who made the work is just as important as what the work was.
Yes.
So, you feel like a black lesbian makes the work, that sort of, like, matters, right?
Yeah.
And we're post that now. But, like, and, like, the media needs to serve a purpose. So, like, we are, like, I'm sort of aware that we live in selfie culture, and to ignore that would
mm-hmm.
be weird, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm. But I think it's It's surprising for me to hear that you would perceive the work as sort of gesturous, you know, whimsical in that way.
It feels.
When really there is a, you know, on the surface there is definitely a humor to it. There is definitely a lightness on the surface, but like at a deeper level, there's like a lot, and that's what I said at the beginning, there's a lot of deep, rich content there. And, you know, even just from, even literally as funny as it is to say potato method is like, it's a slice, it's a cut.
It's still funny to me.
It's hilarious, you know, like at the beginning, you know, like when you just look at it, it's hilarious. But that's what makes it easy to digest.
Yeah.
But if you really, like, take a moment and step back, it's like, well, shit. You know, like, there's a lot being said with that about a lot of things, about body image, about what is Pilates, about...
Because clearly, like, I hope it's clear that I'm not actually, like, thinking about, like, the actual, like, I don't know, legumes, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like the nightshade, like that's not really what we're talking about, and like, you know, it's like I think that it could be interpreted like all kinds of different ways, like, oh, she kind of looks like a potato, it could be interpreted like, oh yeah, like I get it, you know. It depends on the viewer, but the medium serves a purpose, right? So
exactly,
so if you're So that's kind of like always the mantra in one's head, like your mind, right? Where I'm like, nothing's random.
Yeah.
Everything is chosen carefully and thoughtfully, and you know, like if the medium didn't serve its purpose, then it would feel random, I guess.
Yeah. So. A question we often ask on this podcast, and sort of beginning to wrap this all up, is what is your goal or your intent or your mission for like every student or everybody you have the privilege to connect with? Like every student you come into contact with, right? Not like from a body perspective, you know, certainly some of them it's like, oh, well, I'm looking to get that hip to move better. I'm looking to get... whatever, but there tends to be an overarching goal that you are sort of wanting to instill or expose.
The goal is to get people to surprise themselves always.
Love it.
That moment is the most really worthy of their time, right?
Mm-hmm.
That moment where you surprise yourself is the moment you learn the most.
Absolutely.
So, in my opinion, right? So, and I think about the moments where, like, I've surprised myself, or the moments that, like, were the most interesting and provocative and life-changing, for better or for worse. You know, like, where you surprise yourself and you're like, oh, I'm, like, actually, like, way more deconditioned than I thought I was. Like, it's all not always, like, a positive.
Right.
Like, we're not... Like, I'm not, like, a goop, you know, like, we're, like, live your best life, you know? Like, also, like, acknowledge that, like, you're fucked up in some ways.
in probably more than some ways.
Yeah. In lots of ways.
Surprise you're a real human being.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, be surprised. Be humbled. And also, obviously, have, like, the moments where you're, like, oh, like, you surprised yourself because, like, you did something you didn't think you could do in, like, this really amazing, fantastical way, and you feel your own humanity, and you're, you know, like, you're a human being in the world that, like, has, like, flesh, and, you know, that's sort of, like, what I want people to leave. I want them to leave the room going, like, I want people to, like, obsess about their movement. You know, like, I want movement to not be just, like, a side effect to survival. I want it to, like, shift. Like, you have to move in order to survive.
So, what are you currently practicing in your own movement?
Really? What I'm really practicing? well, it changes all the time. But, like,
yeah.
I think that in my own physical body or what I'm teaching?
Either or, both.
I'm trying to make people obsessive about their bodies, but like not in a superficial way. Like I want people to get I'm getting really curious about like my students being very self-aware of, like, I'm trying to make this belief vague. Like if you are having trouble squatting, I want you to be very worried about that. Like, I want people to, like, be concerned that their ranges of motion they cannot do, and they don't have any pathology that causes them not to be able to do it. Like, we're not talking about the injured and you know, we're talking about, like an average healthy young person that cannot hold themselves up, and I want them to be concerned. That is actually not okay. That's what I'm working on.
losing your natural human right to move should be concerning.
Yeah, it's like, a big deal.
If you can't pick your hips up from lying down, I want you to be concerned about that. Not because you're a bad person, but because I want people to age with grace.
Yeah,
and not just possible.
Not because you can't do said exercise, but because it's a movement you should be able to do. You know,
like if you couldn't feed yourself, I'd want you to be concerned. So if you fell, I want you to be able to get up. And I want you to be worried about that. In the best way possible. You know what I mean? That's what I'm working on.
So besides the Pilates Anytime videos you have rolling out this week and probably next week, you're currently on the Anula World Tour. So if people want to catch up with you, where are you going to be in the next, couple months or whatever? Is there anything you want to lead people to?
I'll be in Europe for 3 weeks, which sounds like a really long time to me right now. I'll be doing a Northern European tour, like sort of poor man's Bon Jovi.
Nice.
Like the Bon Jovi cover band.
I like that. Bon Jovi cover band.
It's Joe Bon Jovi.
his younger brother's cousins.
Or older. Which would make it interesting.
You and I kind of talked about your world tour, and it's just a different way of doing workshops and stuff, kind of just showing up and teaching, classes and sort of popping in and out. I've just never really seen it done like that before. I'm sure someone is out there doing that somewhere.
No, I'm the first. I must be
probably. What was your thinking behind that? People want to know all the time of like, how to do this workshop thing, or how to do this, get my work out there beyond my studio thing. And this is just a different way of doing it.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I put my nose down for about 10 years and worked, like, I don't think I left my studio for 10 years, almost. And it was sort of like a winding up feeling, like you're winding something up. And the minute I was let out, there was no one who let me out, but like I sort of like let myself out. It was sort of like a wind up doll. You're just like, just go, go, go. Like you're so excited to be somewhere else because like you literally haven't left like the four walls of your studio for so long. So I think that like people kind of got a sense that like I'm upwardly mobile. Now, and I just got invited, you know, the power of invitation.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, but like, I think that it didn't come from nothing. It came from like, all right, like, I'm wound up now. I'm sitting there, have something to give.
And then I'll retreat back
and, you know, wind up again. But I don't think I had anything to say before, or like, I didn't have anything cohesive to put together as a workshop until I was just ready to give it. And then somehow magically people were ready to hear it.
Yeah.
Man, tiny.
So what can people expect to hear from you right now at workshops? Like, if they come to your workshop,
a lot of this stuff, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a bit, like, less boring. Like,
this has been anything but boring.
Yeah, they're way less boring because they're paying you guys.
Oh, you're right, that part. That does make everything more interesting, it's true.
You have to make it more interesting. but basically all we do in the workshop is really it's just like therapy. You know, like, you're good enough, you're smart enough, people love you. And then we break down some exercises and we're like, what is this one for?
Yeah.
Like, we become like the student of the exercise all over again. And like, have we modified things so much that like we're no longer doing anything that like remotely is close to the point of this movement, right? And it's always like the same 10 exercises in the room. People are always confused by the same one,
yeah.
Which makes me believe that there's a need to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, everybody's like, you know, well, you know, it's just like, I don't get cancer, you know, and I'm like, it would just break it down. And then I think,
you know,
if we give it, yeah, if we break it down enough, you know, then it feels less random.
It's funny, like, when you said that, you know, and you said, have we modified it to, you know, basically being beyond the point of the exercise, immediately what came to my head is, like, have we modified it? And have we begun to modify several of these exercises in such a way that they just become exercises instead
right.
of movements?
Right.
And that's a really interesting question. So I'm glad you're
right.
Out there.
Right, and they're shapes, right?
That.
We're making shapes.
Yeah.
Making shapes with our body. And if we stop and look at, like, what would be the benefit of teaching somebody to make this shape, then you will find new meaning in the exercise or the movement or the shape or whatever you want to call it. But if you're just doing a series of exercises, they have inherently no actual meaning.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But if I teach someone a skill, right, if the skill is to extend and rotate, right, then I'm teaching you literally that skill. If I call it swan or if I call it potato, it doesn't really matter, right?
Yeah.
The skill is extension and rotation.
Yes.
And then, you know, you can do horseback or whatever it is that you're doing and you're confused about it, but like, you're just teaching people to do this and also do this at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You're teaching something mobilizes and something stabilizes, and that's the teacher's job,
mm-hmm.
right? That's our entire job, is to teach people what to mobilize, what to stabilize, and to keep breathing.
Yeah.
And to make a shape with their body for no other reason other than it's a skill that they're gaining. You're gaining another skill. You can turn and bend. You can bend and push. Right?
Yeah.
But we can all happen at the same time or not.
Yeah. It all can happen at the same time. We're just teaching people skills. If they're interested in doing that or not is a different thing, but that's all we're doing. That's what a teacher does. Now, a math teacher teaches skills, like, you know, and your skill is to count and add and subtract. You might have not known that before you went to math class, you know what I mean? Like, no one was born, like, knowing the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, because again...
Maybe you were born, like how babies are born. Yeah.
And it's that same semiotics conversation.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the number is not the thing. It's just a representation
right.
of
right.
that. So what you're really teaching is like the thing, and you're just using some word to describe the thing.
Right.
And And so from someone who has had the privilege of taking several classes and having several interesting conversations with you, anyone who's listening to this podcast right now and sharing lots and lots of food with you, anyone who's interested or listening to the podcast right now who is like, should I or shouldn't I take this workshop or what is this about? Go. You're gonna learn something. And Anula's style of teaching is some textual, you know, it's just like, here, just do this thing, and it just seems like I'm just doing this thing. But at the same time, I'm learning something. You know, I'm learning something about my body. It's just a very cool style. It's a good...
Like you did about your right leg in that class.
Like I did about my right leg, yeah. Like, I would have always said my left leg was a problem.
No, the right leg you all messed up, man.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it was a very... It's a lot of fun, so yeah. So go.
Thank you.
Wrapping up, a question we're sort of ending this season with is, in your opinion, or for you, what is the future of Pilates? Mm. You can answer that however you'd like. That's an open-ended conundrum.
If I have anything to do about it, right, the future is filled with the cheesiest kindness available.
Oh, God. And so awesome.
I hope that Pilates is just filled with kindness. And it sounds really, like, cheesy because I'm a pretty sarcastic person. It's like the one time I'm earnest is when I'm like, nope. The only way to tackle this situation is with kindness. There's no other way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, the only time that, you know, like, I'm actually not kidding around. Like, I'm very serious about my kindness.
I love it. I want that to be on a t-shirt, Anula. T-shirt, pins, hair clips, scrunchies.
You know, honestly,
tennis shoes.
No joking around about that. That's really the only answer to most questions.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time, Anula.
Yeah, and, it's really been great. So much fun.
Yeah, this conversation, like, I had an idea of where I wanted this to go, and this was, like, even better.
Oh, God,
so,
yeah.
Thank you for showing up, for being vulnerable and honest and always funny, and I appreciate it. Thank
Absolutely,
you.
Thank you too. Thanks, Anula.
Thank you, guys.
All right, well, that's a wrap, kids.
Ooh.
Wonderful.
Yeah, nice. Thank you.
Was that okay?
Yeah, it was beautiful.
It was really like spectacular.
Yeah, thanks, Anula. Okay. Just really, really appreciate it.
And I didn't even hear what? You eat the sandwich, so you were really quiet about it in this one.
Yeah.
I was eating sushi, so it's like that. You can just kind of slide it. It just slides down. I wanted something less crunchy.
Amazing.
Understood.
Hey, yeah. Anula, we do this thing with the podcast where at the end we present like a resource for the listeners. So if there's anything that you want to point people to, it can be a book, it can be a podcast, an article, it could be a person. We call it our heroes section. And then a pro tip, like if there's any like one thing you'd like to share, you're welcome to, I mean, this is not obligatory, but we like to ask the guest if they wanted to share anything.
I find that I always go back to, it's so stupid. Although I'm saying anyway, so like, I think everybody in their lifetime should listen to, Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet. And I usually am like, you know what, when in doubt, that's like a good, like it's just like there's something about it that's just so beautiful that like, you know, I wanted, like I was like, we watch Twin Peaks again, you know what I mean? But like, no. Like there's a lot of things that I think people should invest time in, and that's like one of those, like if you haven't listened to it or if you ever never seen it dance, maybe that's like on your list.
Amazing. Awesome.
I think that's a great
the the full ballet. If you're going to watch it, I'll watch the full ballet. And if you're going to listen to it, just listen to the whole thing. It's real long. And then if you're going to do any research on Prokofiev, it's really interesting because he died the same day. They should just Google it. It would be really good.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome, it's a really beautiful story.
Great. Thank you for that. Perfect.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you so much, friend. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anula. Have fun in Europe.
Thanks.
Yeah, have fun in Europe. Okay. See you at the PMA.
Yeah.
See you in October.
Okay. Yeah. So there you go. We're feeling pretty positive that you loved that episode. And as much as we loved making it, definitely a collision of art and history and potatoes. I mean, who knew the combination could be so perfect? As you already heard, Anula took care of our heroes and pro tip, essentially. So you'll find a little bit more about that in the show notes. And otherwise, you can reach us at thinkingpilatespodcast@gmail.com. You can also like us on Facebook. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast and look forward to the next time. Until then, breathe deep and teach well. All the things that make you sing and tap your little toes.